Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. When contact with aliens was made about the time of Roswell, what was the first thing on the minds of the military? How to get their hands on that alien technology, for sure. It's been speculated that much of the rapid increase in technology in the last 50 years or so has been due to the adoption of alien technology. Not so, per the Zetas, as the secret government got nothing from their encounters with aliens. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Reverse Engineered, written July 1997. The rapid pace whereby technology grows by leaps and bounds, exponentially as the years pass, has resulted in speculation that this was due to alien technology secured from crashed ships and reverse engineered by the military and their civilian cohorts in the military-industrial complex. This is completely false, and in fact is simply a rumor started by those individuals within the military-industrial complex who wish to be elevated in the eyes of the populace and fear losing their jobs and prestige during budget cutbacks. Stealth technology was developed to mock what the military was observing in alien ship movements and the ability to disappear in a wink. The new stealth technology was quite within the realm of humans to develop, as it's simply using a shape to evade radar, and not all that effectively, we might add. Night vision goggles are simply screening out all but infrared and then boosting this light spectrum. In this, human scientists are also dealing with concepts long understood by humans, such as light spectrums and the chemistry and electrical stimulation of these light spectrums. Fiber optics is a technology which evolved due to experiments in communications over mediums other than the expensive and increasingly diminishing supply of copper. Glass has been used by mankind for eons, an accidental discovery resulting from sand lying under extremely hot bonfires on the beach. All manner of substances were experimented with in laboratories in an attempt to find a cheap alternative to copper, all of which had nothing to do with the alien presence or technology. Do we appear to need wires to support our communication or ability to maneuver? End of the quote from Zeta Talk. So, if no technology was obtained by the U.S. military in their encounters with aliens, what the heck was going on at Area 51? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Area 51, written August 1995. Out in the Nevada desert lies the most watched air base in the United States. You know the one. It's the one that doesn't exist. The one with no name. Area 51. Are flying saucers being dismantled, assembled, inspected, and flown by humans at Area 51? Not anymore, though until quite recently this was one of the activities going on at this ultra-secret, hush-hush base. Area 51 is all the more in the news because of its desire to be secret. At this time, should they throw open the doors and let the public wander through, everyone would be disappointed. It's a tomb. Empty, or virtually so, in preparation for just such public exposure. Where did the spaceships go, and how did the military come into possession of them? The ships were moved by the alien groups who provided them to the military, and the whole operation has set up elsewhere, not on a military base. Are these our ships? No, and this is as much as we can say about the matter, which for the discerning reader aware of the rules, says quite precisely whose ships these were. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. What the Zetas are referring to are the service-to-self aliens who provided the ships to the military. More about that later. The service itself are noted for their lies, as anyone familiar with the current Bush administration should be familiar with. They lie, and the ships given to the military were certainly not any kind of gift, as it was impossible for the U.S. military to learn how to fly them effectively. Thus, there were many crashed ships. And I quote from Zetatov, Crashed Ships, written November 1995. The public, hot on the trail of the physical evidence they were sure the government possessed, has long sought crashed ships. Some of them are rumored to be massive, requiring roads blocked in the dead of night and coordination between military and civilian forces to cart away in the dead of night. Are there stories of such ships, and how often do such wrecks occur? In fact, the military has no ships wrecked by aliens in their possession, outside of the Roswell crash, which was deliberate. And all stories to the contrary are false. Stories of crashed alien ships feed the sense of power and control that humans in leadership positions demand. In some cases, these stories are invented by government servants to get those in power off their backs. Crashed ships diminish the alien presence, putting the skill and technology of aliens on a par with that of humans, who regularly crash planes and cars. How would it be that aliens would cross the universe, yet not be able to putt about on your planet? Crashed alien ships have not and will not be presented to the public because they simply do not exist. End of the quote from Zetatov. If there weren't crashed ships, then what are the stories, such as the crash at Kecksburg? This was just an attempt by the U.S. military to learn how to fly one of the ships on loan from the service itself aliens, who knew the U.S. military would not figure out how to fly them. And I quote from Zetatov, Crash at Kecksburg, written June 1996. As a result of their early agreement with aliens in the service to South, the military got possession of several ships. This was certainly no secret, as Bob Lazar confirmed the rumors. The military has never figured out how to operate the ships they were given, and many deaths have resulted from their attempts. Unlike human vehicles, which have a propulsion system and manual controls, alien ships house a strange device that cannot be examined and mental controls. The device that supports density switching and rapid transport from one part of the universe to another cannot be opened and examined, as it explodes and disintegrates when this is attempted. Of course, the scientist ordered to proceed with such an experiment died instantly. In time, the decision was made to simply use the ships and to stop trying to understand how they worked. The fact that the alien ships required mental control only momentarily stopped the generals who wanted desperately to control such a device. They drilled the smug service to self aliens assigned as an escort without end and returned for more lessons after every abortive attempt. The stories told of furtive observations at Area 51 where wobbly spaceships were seen lifting a few feet off the ground and then flopping back are true. Eventually, enough control was attained that the ambitious generals would order a field run with this ship or that. The idea was to do more with the ship than simply lift and wobble about. They wanted rapid travel across the skies. They wanted to impress the heck out of anyone they were interested in intimidating. At least they could do that, they reasoned. So the human pilots, selected for their confidence and demonstrated skill, would aim a little higher, a little further, and wham! The crash remains, which might be found anywhere, would be quickly collected by special military teams scrambled with the greatest haste. End of the quote from Zetatov. Bob Lazar reports that he worked on one of these spacecraft, hired to figure out how they worked. Is his story true? Yes, per the Zetas. And I quote from Zetatov, Lazar's Sportcraft, written August 1996. Many humans interested in Bob Lazar's true reports have seen his sketch of an alien ship, the inner workings diagrammed, and the method of operation laid out to the best of his ability. Is this a real spaceship? And are his speculations on its operations correct? Yes and no, as where he saw a real ship, his understanding of how levitation and rapid travel occur was not close to the facts. All scientists in the employ of MJ-12 are to this day still scratching their heads, as the details were never explained to them, and being unable to dissect the mechanism without an explosion occurring, they can only speculate. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. So why was there a crashed ship at Roswell, the only one crashed, and that deliberately? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Roswell, written July 1995. Roswell is all the rage here in the United States. It is the flag bearer in the parade of those who march to learn the truth. The facts are well known, and the facts that are known relate almost completely to the truth. This is a true story. What is not known is that Roswell was not an accident. At that time, within the United States, many alien groups wanted a dialogue with the United States government. We chose the United States because of its leadership in the community of nations. The United States was and is sticking its nose into every activity throughout the globe. We knew we could rely on the United States to be the message bearer for any message the alien groups wished to get out. The United States, as other governments, was not approachable. Individuals who were contacted by the alien groups were treated as though they were infected. They were not listened to. The block in these matters was the human desire to be in control. Therefore, in order to allow the humans in the United States government to be open to our message, we allowed them to be in control. Several entities within the alien groups trying to contact the United States government volunteered to be of service. They expected to die. The plan was to allow ships to crash, ostensibly at the hands of humans. This maximized the feeling of control the humans would experience, particularly as the front end of any contact was, unfortunately, through the military. Once they felt they could harm us, they were willing to parley. Were people silenced by a death during the Roswell incident? Yes, and more than the public suspects. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The movie E.T. the Extraterrestrial was supposedly based on a true story that one of the aliens in the Roswell crash survived and communicated with the U.S. military. True? Yes, for the Zetas. And I quote from Zeta Talk, EBE, written July 1995. Rumors surrounding the Roswell incident include stories about an alien who survived the crash and lived to chat, in a manner of speaking, with the government. These rumors also state that the movie E.T. was based on this situation, as a small boy, a son of one of the government officials involved, struck up a telepathic relationship with an EBE. Any of this true? Some. EBE was returned to his group alive after contact was established over the next few years. Rumors that EBE died were spread so any press to see and talk to him would be eliminated. EBE, as he was called, was one of seven aliens on board the two craft that crashed at Roswell. One craft was utterly demolished, as it was set to explode close to the ground and did so as planned. The second craft held four aliens and crashed as planned without becoming utterly demolished. It was expected that the impact would kill all four who expected to die, but one lived on with injuries. This was a shock to this alien, who was unprepared for the intense interest in his digestive, breathing, and medical needs. He found himself both held at arm's length and closely examined by the very nervous humans who had recovered him. An officer, called suddenly to the site where EBE was being housed, had his young son in tow and left him in the car while he conferred inside. When he returned, he found that his young son had much to tell him, having been in telepathic communication with EBE. Without having the two ever meet, and without confirming to the young boy that his conversational pal was real, the government subsequently had the two in close proximity and questioned the boy endlessly. To this day, he cannot prove that this occurred, other than that questions were put to him. The impact of Roswell on human culture, and on the government in particular, was that they knew for sure that aliens, intelligent beings from other worlds, existed. The legacy of EBE himself was essentially the quaint story of E.T., where aliens are viewed as shy and non-threatening, more vulnerable than humans, and with charming eccentricities. That they bond well with young children is considered by most to be a de facto proof of their acceptability, in line with the adage that a person can be trusted if the dog and the kids take a shine to him. EBE was followed, however, by contacts with the government by a very different sort of alien, those in the service to self, and this set the stage for the next phase of the government's relationship with aliens. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Who were these service-to-self aliens? The omnipotent Krill, for one. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Omnipotent Krill, written July 1995. One of the first aliens in the service-to-self orientation to contact the United States government was a member of the alien race from Orion, who called himself the Omnipotent Krill. He had studied human societies, or rather had his lackeys do this study, and concluded that a guttural name that sounded like a growl would most induce fear. Thus the concocted name. One should take note that it also sounds similar to the word kill, and not by accident. This alien greatly impressed the military officers who met him in that he understood their need for order and hierarchy, their concept of command by the most powerful and well-connected, and their willingness in the main to sell out sections of the populace for any gain in power that they might attain. As he was firmly in the service to self, they were in effect speaking his language. He was at home. Krill set to work disinforming the military as best suited his ultimate aim. As he wished to conquer them, he told them they were in charge. They bought it. As he wished their cooperation, he told them they would receive technology in exchange. They bought it. After all these years, not much has come from this vaunted meeting with the omnipotent Krill. His disinformation has been unraveled bit by bit, so that any information he provided has essentially been discarded. However, there are still information pools formed essentially from this source that have not dried up. They refuse to be silenced, and repeat the same silly stories time and again. These sources have a life of their own, having sensed that the information comes directly from the government. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Attempting to counter the cozy relationship that Krill had established with the U.S. military, the service to other aliens crashed at Roswell. The logic being that control freaks would talk to those they thought they need not fear. But when this gambit failed, they used other techniques. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Power Outages, written September 1995. Following the Roswell incident, the various alien groups in the service to other orientation were displeased with dialogue that had been opened with the U.S. government. They found themselves not only held at arm's length, but also negated, treated as entities one need not worry about. Where Roswell had been staged, several aliens in the service to others sacrificed themselves in the crash so that the military could feel they had the upper hand and thus be amenable to an approach. The aliens now found themselves facing a cocky group who treated them dismissively, one extreme to another. At this point in time, MJ-12 had also been approached by the service to self aliens, whom they treated with respect as this group had not presented themselves as crashed ships or dead and injured bodies. In the eyes of MJ-12, who looked on the surface, the service to self aliens had their act together. We expressed, through the human translators assigned to us, that our capabilities were in fact superior to the service-to-self aliens they were giving preferential attention to, but were brushed aside. As the awakening is overseen by the Council of Worlds, this matter was bantered about, and eventually the council granted a spectacle that would not be lost on MJ-12, the intended audience. Prior to power outages, there were several attempts to impress MJ-12 with less drastic measures. Power outages, after all, affect hospitals, little old ladies tottering to the restroom, and moving traffic. We wish to avoid this. Natural occurrences were affected first, having been announced well ahead of time. Unseasonable temperature variations, so that midwinter would become positively balmy or midsummer chilly. But this impressed no one, and we were only credited with being good weather predictors. Light rays were deflected over broad areas so that midday became night for a brief but noticeable time. But as no disruption of activity took place, MJ-12 was unimpressed. So it's dark outside, then turn on the lights. Thus we determined and effectively argued the case before the council to prevent the lights from being turned on. Power outages were not unknown and could be caused by any number of overload or mechanical failure situations. People would buy it on the local level, at a national level, in smoke-filled rooms and in the corridors of power. The truth would be passed around and hurriedly suppressed. How do you suppose that MJ-12 came to have so many corporate leaders in its board membership? They were initiated during the panics. Suppress the press. Issue statements that had no relationship to the facts. Use the bully boardroom and keep each other closely informed. When spreading abroad untruth, close communication and coordination is required. MJ-12 was no longer a clique of the military. It became, for a time, a clique of the establishment. Subsequent to the power outages, which did not sweep without warning over broad areas, we found MJ-12 looking at us with new eyes. They now believed our explanation of the Roswell crashes. Their eyes had been opened. At this point, the power outages were no longer necessary. A major factor in the success of this awakening maneuver was the utter inability of the government to stop the outages. Learning of our schedule, which was announced days ahead of the occurrence, they would arrange every kind of backup. All contingencies failed. Power flow was stilled for the length of time announced, and not so much as a flashlight battery worked. The mechanism used by us involved essentially irradiating the area with a countering force affecting electron flow above a certain level. Thus human thought or the winking of fireflies would not be affected, but human technology was at a standstill. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Thus, the early days of MJ-12 became a battleground of good versus evil, with dual alien groups competing for the attention of the U.S. military. At first, the service itself set the stage, but as their lies gradually were discovered and the trustworthiness of the service to others was established, this changed. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Good or Evil, written February 2002. During the period between Roswell and the present, the alien presence has been variously presented to mankind as evil to good. During the early years, the predominant presentation was evil, intending to enslave mankind and dominate the globe, perhaps eating man as a snack. This view has migrated to the comic, as in the movie Men in Black, where a giant bug is fought off by good aliens and mankind as a team. This trend of reporting the alien presence as evil is based in large part by the perception of MJ-12 that the aliens they were first dealing with were of this mindset. This perception was correct, as they were first contacted by the ilk of the omnipotent Krill. The extent of this group during the time they had influence over MJ-12 ran into many atrocities that the public is scarcely aware of. However, Nancy, in her engagement with MJ-12, encountered these atrocities and fought to alert MJ-12 that they could just say no, as we have stated. What were these atrocities? We'll list a few. It's been reported that street people were picked up and delivered for experiments to evil aliens in underground complexes. This is true, and the experiments horrified those in the military assigned to deliver these hapless souls. These experiments, akin to those used by the Nazis during World War II, were to instill a feeling of hopelessness in the bums picked up on the street, so to drive their souls into the service to self-orientation. Enslavement, the sense that one cannot resist, the sense that one should align with the strong and turn on the weak, are techniques used to drive souls toward the service to self-orientation. These experiments included maiming humans so their legs pointed backwards, or they could not stand up straight but must assume humiliating stances. There was no end to the creativity of these service-to-self soldiers, who were specialists in these settings during transformation times. In addition, the CIA, created in the main from the folding Nazi SS, were influenced to abduct and kill babies, in the theory that aliens might be inhabiting baby bodies as an infiltration means. These innocent babies, abducted in the 1940s, were killed in horrendously painful ways, the theory being that the aliens inhabiting their bodies would leap out and reveal themselves. As with Satanism, the only accomplishment was that the CIA and military assigned to assist them turned increasingly to the service to self-orientation. Thus, even in 1994, when Nancy entered her engagement with MJ-12, some of these actions were still in process. Thus, stories about street people reporting being taken underground or about evil aliens lurking underground have their basis. Nancy volunteered to meet, for instance, a dino, which did his best to intimidate her. Suffice it to say that she gave him the finger in challenge with no repercussions. She likewise repeated this going into the chambers where street people were maimed, inciting a rebellion among them when she demonstrated just saying no. These chambers are now closed, as MJ-12 realized they likewise could say no. There was a small segment of MJ-12 which insisted the service to self aliens they had long had a relationship with should not just be rejected out of fear. They argued that retaliation might result, where they refused to provide human experimental subjects. They allowed these aliens to continue to live in underground chambers. Thus, until MJ-12 disbanded upon the Bush election coup, there was contact. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The rumors about MJ-12 are that it was set up quickly at the time of Roswell to deal with the alien presence, how to tell or not to tell the world, as the case may be, how to discern the alien agenda, and how to respond to it. But the role MJ-12 was to play expanded beyond that. And I quote from Zeta Talk, MJ-12 Agenda, written October 2000. The general public, to the extent that they are aware of the existence of MJ-12 and its purported purpose of controlling interaction with extraterrestrials, are unclear on additional goals. They hear stories about MJ-12's regular meetings with aliens, desires on the part of the U.S. military to secure alien technology, membership in MJ-12 by select and invited individuals, and suppression of news on all this by harsh means. Are the goals of MJ-12 containment, self-promotion, and suppression? Hardly. Where the scope of activities in the early days of MJ-12 were certainly dominated by an intense desire to determine what the alien agenda was and to come out on top of any arrangement, MJ-12 soon found itself holding a tightly capped bottle that was about to explode. Not only were aliens contacting the citizenry of the world on a regular and increasing basis, the evidence presented by ourselves, the service to other Zetas, on the approach of Planet X for its periodic passage was bearing true, and this translated to an almost mind-boggling responsibility toward the general populace. Where the self-serving goals of Alternatives 1, 2, and 3 are well known among students of ufology, the goals of those members of MJ-12 who were altruistic are not well known. Where MJ-12 was heavily influenced in its early days by the CIA, which indeed ran drugs and laundered money on the excuse that MJ-12 as a secret organization needed outside funding, the arm of MJ-12 that has strengthened and become dominant of late had a different focus. Clearly, the early goals of MJ-12 to suppress knowledge of the alien presence could not be perpetuated, was an untenable solution, and could only end in humiliation for MJ-12. This has thus migrated to a series of controlled leaks, semi-truths, and even frank admissions, with contactees and those reporting sightings no longer punished. Likewise, were some members from the early days of MJ-12 seeking to get rich and hold the reins of power where they could not be discovered or taken to account, resulted in mischief and even crime. This was steadfastly routed out and the perpetrators called to account. MJ-12 functioned as the secret organization it was intended to be, sparsely funded and the poverty child of the government, truly, in that MJ-12 utilizes the many arms of the government to implement their programs, and in that government employees in the main staff MJ-12, there is no need for independent funding. Seeing that the pole shift was rapidly approaching and was framing out to be the horror we had described during our initial encounters shortly after Roswell, MJ-12 set out first to inform the public via the media, with movies having a cataclysmic overtone. Tidal waves, asteroids, and missiles of death raining down upon cities from space, dust in the air putting the Earth in a death grip of doom, all these were designed to set the populace to thinking about such matters, but always with the theme that the government could and would save them. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. If MJ-12 was a secret arm of the government, without funding of its own, how did it function? In the main, it functioned by using existing branches, the FBI, the CIA, whatever. During my engagement with MJ-12, I often found myself on military bases that had been closed, were supposedly idle, but were very much in use by MJ-12. Especially were out of view of the public eye, so that lights and activity would not be noticed. The tables and chairs were on the cheap, folding tables and chairs, and some of the uniforms taken out of storage, clearly. The mothballs dusted off, so to speak. Things that would not be missed were utilized. And I quote from Zeta Talk, MJ-12 Groups, written April 1996. MJ-12 does not operate in a vacuum as a standalone, off-the-books agency. It has tentacles whereby it reaches out to gather information and accomplish its goals. MJ-12 is the administrative hub where policy decisions are reached, and the center where key contacts with the outside world are maintained. However, it would be short-sighted indeed in that those in its hierarchy have parallel positions within the federal bureaucracy to not use those very bureaucracies. In fact, given the structure of MJ-12, it's only natural. Without being specific, we will enumerate some of those tentacles. The military branches all have intelligence units, which are skilled in various degrees at electronic snooping, interrogation techniques, and undercover activities. Individuals from these units are assigned to a stint of duty to MJ-12, just as they are assigned to secret missions and are no more prone to talk about these assignments than any other. You hear about none of it. Both the FBI and CIA have vast pools of information on corporations, individuals and groups running under the many different charters that can exist in human society. These intelligence agencies have formal arrangements with MJ-12, who has but to ask for this information for it to be delivered pronto. Military installations include many complexes held in abeyance, just in case. Land and buildings are hard enough to come by in times of plenty, and during cutbacks are not released in the main. Idle facilities in remote areas are ideal for temporary use by active MJ-12 members, who are almost invariably from the military. Should the reader find this astonishing, that federal employees are regularly dealing with MJ-12, yet the public hears at most rumors of this activity, they should bear in mind the following. Intelligence groups and the military in general operate on a need-to-know basis. This rule is in place to prevent covert operations from being carelessly exposed, the enemy from learning of plans, and to a small degree to prevent the public from learning what the government is really up to. Also, when services are performed for MJ-12, These services are not distinguishable from normal, everyday services. The requests don't have MJ-12 stamped in big bright letters on the front. They come wrapped in commonplace covers and thus raise little suspicion. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Will the public get the truth about MJ-12, the secret government? Not on your life, and certainly not in your lifetime. And I quote from Zeta Talk, MJ-12 documents, written August 1996. A still hotly debated topic is the validity of what are purported to be documents from MJ-12, dating back to President Truman's era. These carefully manufactured documents are authentic enough in appearance to convince many that they are real, yet flaws exist that have others convinced they are a fraud. Both situations are true, as the documents are what could be termed a half-truth. The release of these documents, the content of which is false, was intended to be a leak by your government that would hasten the awakening of the populace to the alien presence. Where the documents line up with the facts is in the existence of MJ-12, periodic meetings in secret, and in those days the involvement of the President of the United States. Where the documents part from the truth is where they give the impression that MJ-12 was a fleeting response, that the matters they addressed were limited in scope, or that they were almost casual about dealing with the alien presence and what this would mean for humanity. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. What kind of activities did MJ-12 get into? Are the rumors true, for instance, about the Philadelphia experiment, where man and metal merged? Yes and no. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Philadelphia Experiment, written July 1995. The Philadelphia experiment was fictional, a disinformation scheme to divert humans from exploring the real experiment that occurred. The Philadelphia experiment, much in the media, is a fraud perpetrated to distract people from pursuing the real Philadelphia experiment, which didn't take place anywhere near Philadelphia. Servicemen were indeed injured, and because the risk of questions existed, the cover story was put up to effectively point any questions to a dead end. The real experiment with moving between densities, which can and does occur naturally on your planet, was done in a warehouse in Kansas, rural, remote, virtually uninhabited. Moving into the next density requires more than just bombardment of matter to the point of compression tension. It requires a total shift. And if one expects to return, a total shift back. The humans conducting this experiment were of such an orientation that they did not care about the servicemen being used or what might become of them. Rather than hesitate, knowing they didn't have all the parameters in place, they proceeded. The servicemen, who were encased in a metal box, were left partially in the next density, along with portions of their container. They were, of course, all dead, but the witnesses of this experiment and the associates whom the servicemen had just recently been mingling with were many. The government concocted a repeat experiment, which proceeded partway, enough so that the story as to the results was similar. Additional servicemen were subjected, knowing the probable results, but most of these survived to chat among themselves and their families. All secrets escape, leaks occur, and in this way, the investigators would be altogether in the wrong vicinity and talking to altogether the wrong participants. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Then there are the time travel rumors. Are these true? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Montauk Project, written May 1996. Having observed that the service itself aliens they were in contact with could do marvelous things, the secret government had no doubt that they could also travel through time. That this capacity is strictly regulated by the Council of Worlds and is almost without exception never granted to the Service to Self crowd when they request authorization was, of course, not mentioned. In concert with density-shifting experiments in the Philadelphia experiments, time travel was attempted. This was an utter failure, with a human scientist tinkering with the machines under instructions received from the Service to Self aliens, and suffering under the wrath of generals who were sure that the project was only failing because of their incompetence. After a time, the project was put on hold, due more to emotional and mental exhaustion than any change in plans. Eventually, the generals involved realized that those in the service to self lie freely and without conscience, and abandoned the project altogether. Nonetheless, rumors abound, and due to the sensational nature of the project and the power that would accrue to those who might succeed, the rumors and interest in the Montauk experiment are unlikely to die. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And an exchange of alien technology for human experimentation, i.e. Project Prometheus. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Project Prometheus, written October 1996. Project Prometheus is rumored to be an exchange of alien technology for certain favors granted by the government, specifically being allowed to abduct the citizenry. We've addressed these issues and explained that alien technology was not given to humans, although aliens in the service to self-orientation most certainly said this was to be the case. They lie. In addition, an abduction right is not something that aliens need the government to grant, as the government has no control over alien activities. What is called abduction is under the control of the human giving the call, and thus is under the control of the individual human desiring contact. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Or the famed alternative 1, 2, and 3, by which the Earth will remain habitable and an elite group of humans can escape the coming pole shift. Any of this true? And I quote from Alternative 3, written July 1995. Alternatives 1, 2, and 3 have been much bandied about as solutions given to humans on how to approach the coming Earth changes. Some stories have it that humans derived the three scenarios themselves, but the stories coming from sources closer to the heart of the matter point to alien suggestions on these alternatives. This is correct. Why would humans decide to locate on other planets to escape pollution or nuclear fallout when they have neither the means to travel to other planets, the capability of sustaining themselves there, or a pollution situation dire enough to be frantic about escaping from? It is, therefore, obvious that these suggestions were given to humans by aliens. Aliens in the service to self-orientation, we might add. The alien agenda was falsely presented to the humans involved as being a concern for their survival. As the high-level government contacts were strongly in the service to self-orientation themselves, they saw this all as their escape, their alternatives, and were not at all thinking about humanity in general. What the aliens truly sought was to subvert those humans to sink more and more deeply into the service to self-orientation. To some degree, and with some humans, they succeeded. Alternative 3 is suspected as having been implemented, as alternatives 1 and 2 have been. The United States government went underground at Mount Weather and numerous other spots, as has been documented to the satisfaction of even the skeptical reader. This fact is not even being denied by the government anymore. Portions of the government, and we are speaking of rogue CIA officers, set out to trim and prune the Earth's humanity to their liking. Thus we have the AIDS and Ebola viruses, as well as various wars and conflicts which the CIA always seems to be at the center of. Likewise, Alternative 3 was implemented, but as the populace can't get up to the surface of other planets, this can't be demonstrated to the satisfaction of skeptics. As with the other alternatives, the particulars of this alternative were something the service to self aliens contacting the government were familiar with. They sent representatives of the U.S. government and other governments up to these places to demonstrate that such a living arrangement was hospitable. Matters soon went amok, however. Soon the human guests became stressed in the heavy service to self environment. Here, far from home, they found themselves watching continually on a daily basis and with no respite the harsh reality of life in the service to self community. Stress diseases cropped up among the humans, ulcers and heart palpitations and arthritic pains. They became distracted in their work, stricken with headaches and vague feelings of weakness. Their human commanders, paranoid about living away from the Earth to begin with, attributed all this to planetary factors such as gravity, air pressure, air composition, or perhaps strange rays that were not measurable on their instruments. The plan was abandoned, and the humans who participated were exterminated. Their bodies were not returned to Earth, nor should one look for this to happen. The moon was one of the planets occupied by humans as a result of the implementation of Alternative 3. Can humans see these installations? They cannot, as they are on what is termed the dark side of the moon. Ourselves, the service to other Zetas, not involved in the Alternative 3 installations, as we are the service to other Zetas. The two groups do not mix. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The rumors are that the President of the U.S. was never a member of MJ-12, but the Vice President could be. True? Yes, unless an existing member became the President. During my engagement with MJ-12, Gore was regularly at meetings, but Clinton never. George W. Bush, however, was inducted into MJ-12 by his father, so in this case both he and Cheney had membership status. Just how does one become a member? And I quote from Zeta Talk, MJ-12 Service, written July 1996. MJ-12 is less than 2,000 strong. The membership can be put to death if they reveal the existence of MJ-12 or any information they've learned through membership. In addition, they're barred from making personal profit from the information they learned. This is no idle death threat. This occurs at least yearly. Dozens of individuals have been swiftly put to death from breaching this. Most government employees or contractors who serve MJ-12 have no idea who the recipient of their service is. MJ-12 operates out of various intelligence agencies, which all go on a need-to-know basis. If one delivers a package from point A to point B, or researches the background of a civilian, does one need to know why this service is required? As a general rule, MJ-12 does not even allow active members of MJ-12, those who know they're working for this arm of the government, to come in contact with aliens. Were we provided a travel service as part of our agreement with MJ-12, the humans being transported never encountered the pilots. They walk up a ramp, enter an empty room, the door closes and shortly reopens at the destination. No contact. We are in telepathic contact with our human counterparts and learn of the itinerary in this way. Where only a small select group within MJ-12 had knowledge of travel by spaceship, an even smaller group actually had contact with aliens. These individuals are subject to a battery of psychological tests and field trials, and are characteristically highly stable individuals. They're essentially unflappable. As with MJ-12 in general, one does not choose these careers. They are chosen. How many of the less than 2,000 MJ-12 members know of the coming pole shift? Few actually know that Planet X is inbound. People know small portions of the truth, and they're told to make plans, to prepare, for the likelihood of this or that, without being told with certainty. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The rumor is that MJ-12 often recruited orphans into its ranks, those who would not be noticed if they went missing, those with few relatives to share stories with, those with few loyalties. I found this to be true. The man assigned to me as my handler during my engagement with MJ-12 had been orphaned at an early age and was unmarried. My engagement with MJ-12 has ended because MJ-12 as an organization interacting with aliens no longer exists. Some might claim it still exists, but this is a false front. The governing boards phased MJ-12 out just ahead of Bush and Cheney taking office in January 2000. Why? Because they knew the power of MJ-12 would be misused by this crew. In essence, by disbanding, They freed any alien groups such as the Zetas, who had agreements with MJ-12, from their obligations. The travel service the Zetas were offering to MJ-12 stopped. No more spaceship trips, cloaked, so that meetings could take place anywhere in an instant among parties at a distance from each other. No more teleporting in and out of places, secretly. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Suicide, written January 2001. After the Supreme Court maneuver, when Bush was destined to become president, we warned that there would be Social Security scams, swinging money to Wall Street to bolster Wall Street so it would not crash as soon as it surely will, and to watch for the new administration to be heavily loyal to industrial interests and special interests of the wealthy, and to expect the enclaves of the wealthy would be protected by the military and the average man would be cut loose to his own resources. We also mentioned that our association with MJ-12 was not necessarily going to continue because it was an agreement made with the U.S. government, the arm of which became the secret government. A U.S. government cannot just call itself a U.S. government. It must, in fact, act like a U.S. government for our agreement to continue. Our agreement is null and void if the government serves only the special few and not the people it is sworn to serve, if it's no longer a democracy because martial law has been imposed, and for many other similar reasons. Because, over the years, presidents have tried to prevent the incoming president from knowing about and using MJ-12, it has increasingly been cut away from the White House and become an independent arm. MJ-12 has been populated by various civil servants in the intel organizations to some extent, and some individuals who have never had any government service, but who were pulled into MJ-12 service due to their expertise or other position to help on a particular issue. All of the approximately 2,000 people who entered MJ-12 and became members agreed and signed an agreement to allow MJ-12 to assassinate them should they begin leaking information or financially gaining from information they learned from their MJ-12 association. So it wasn't a large group, and the governing board of 40 was certainly not a large group, but the governing board in particular was very independent. The president could not pull their strings. The vice president was a member, but not a member of the governing board. Because of the distress the governing boards of MJ-12 felt over what they were certain were plans to misuse the Zeta travel service, they disbanded themselves. This happened in December, after the election, and they allowed a 2-week close down. End of the quote from Zeta Talk.
I'm Roger, president of Troubled Times Incorporated. We're a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping mankind survive during troubled times when self-sufficiency may be the only answer. Our organization offers a twin set CD of survival information at cost to the public. The CDs are in hypertext and PDF format, two popular browser formats, and contain all the information collected by the massive Troubled Times website. The CDs allow you to browse this information offline at your leisure. The cost of the twinned pair is $4.10, and this includes postage. You can also get the survival booklet, a hip-sized booklet of the gist of the Troubled Times advice, for just $5, including postage. We offer a popular combo package for $7.50 that includes both the CDs and the booklet with the lower postage expense reflected in that price. Send for your copies today to start making practical plans for your and your family's survival. Just click on the $4.10 CD link at www.zetatalk.com and your copy will be on its way.
That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought, those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.